Good morning. Welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. It's Wednesday, and it is hot. We did get rain yesterday. I was thankful for that. Thankful for the farmers and the people who grow things. My crabgrass seems to be doing just fine. So anyway, I'm not that concerned about it, but it is hot. The lots across East Tennessee and this country in general are emptying of new vehicles. If they're not empty already, they soon will be. Doesn't look like there's any reprieve on the horizon as far as the chip shortage. It's amazing, though, the number of customers that come into the dealership. And it's not just customers, just people who really don't make staying on top of business news a priority every day. They've got other things going on in their lives, but we are living this. And if you're in the market for a car, you're living it as well, because the selection is just not there. I have a wonderful couple I've been working with for the last couple of weeks. And, it's been long. It's over a month now. We've been trying to find them a particular large size SUV of some kind that will fit into their budget. And so we tried the used car market. We go to, I have a lot of different sources that typically will produce a nice quality car for somebody. And they're just not right now. They're all dried up. Hertz is used to be a really big source of vehicles for car dealers because they cycled through so many so quickly. And so they're at the auction buying used cars now because they don't have enough cars to rent to folks. But anyway, it's not all gloom and doom. Business is really good. I mean, we're still, I know that sounds like I'm talking out two sides of my mouth. You don't have any cars, but business is good. Service business is good, and we're selling everything we get as soon as we get it. So we're just not able to build up any kind of inventory. As a matter of fact, we're selling at a faster pace than what we can rebuild our inventory, so that's why it's continuing to shrink. So the new world in the car business, I guess in the near future, I think I mentioned this the other day, but if you are interested in a new car and it's not available, you need to go ahead and order one. If the manufacturer that sells the vehicle you're interested in actually allows you to order vehicles, some don't. All the domestics do. So if you want for example, the new Ford Maverick, let's say that you think that's this new small four-door truck that Ford is coming out with that is slightly smaller than a Ranger is going to be the right vehicle for you, then go to gatewayfordmaverick.com, and it'll take you straight to the section in our website where you can build your Maverick and actually reserve one. Now, what does that cost? Well, that's $100 to reserve one. It is fully refundable. And then if you actually want to finalize an order, then we can do that. There's no real obligation there. But if you think you might want one, you need to do that, because if you don't get in line, you're not going to get one anytime soon. That's true with a lot of the new hot products that are coming out. Unless, of course, you want to pay way over MSRP for something. Here's what's going to happen with the Ford Bronco. So the first 160,000 Ford Broncos that are produced are technically sold. Now, some dealers have played games and ordered a bunch of them under fictitious names, and they will probably get them in and then report the delivery, even pay sales tax if they have to, and then turn around and sell it and mark them up $10,000 or $15,000. That's what's going to happen. That's how hot that vehicle is going to be. Now, it was somewhere under 40, I believe, that our first 40 are sold. And we offered to sell them all for MSRP. And at one point in time, not too long ago, paying MSRP for something was like, you know, the worst thing you could do. But I think the industry is such now that MSRP is a good deal. If you can find somebody that's willing to do that. Of course, we do all the time. We have a lot of vehicles that we sell for well under MSRP still. Most of our Nissans are reduced, but there just aren't a lot of rebates and incentives. Nissan did announce yesterday that they're going to be cutting production on a lot of their vehicle lines too. So we shall see. I got a big wheel coming in today from Nissan to see our new facility, and I'm going to make sure that it's spit shined and ready to go. And problem is, well, usually is that way, but I have had a hard time finding somebody to clean our facility. It's just, again, it's the personnel issue. A lot of people can stay at home, make more money than they can working. So I've had my detail shop people come up that, you know, they're supposed to be detailing cars, and they're having to move a mop around in order to keep things looking good. And trying to find somebody who can wash windows is equally hard. So we're just trying to stay on top of that kind of stuff. Showrooms are empty right now because we need stuff to put on the lot. That's really the way it is, folks. I don't care where you go, you're going to find the same thing. So it's definitely a different world than what it was pre-pandemic. Well, let's take our first break, and we'll be back here in just a minute. So we're back with this edition of My Car Guru. You know, the average age of vehicles has just hit an all-time high. Cars, trucks, and SUVs are getting older, according to this article in USA Today, as used car prices soar. This is no surprise to me. I remember in the beginning of my career, which is in the late 70s, early 80s, when a car hit 100,000 miles, it was worn out. You probably remember that as well. Of course, that's true. I mean, when you think that we were selling Granadas and Ford Fairmonts, of course, I was a Chevy dealer back then, or my dad was, and I was working there, and we were selling Malibus and Chevettes in Vegas. They weren't much better. And so, when a car hit 100,000 miles, it was considered worn out. Well, today, cars are made a lot better. Thank goodness they're not made like they used to. You remember when people used to come in all the time and say, well, they ain't made like they used to, you know? Well, thank goodness. Cars are safer now. They are, they perform better. They get better fuel economy. And they last longer. They don't rust out as quickly as they once did. Rust is still somewhat of an issue. I remember back when Chevrolet came out with the all-new 1973 Chevy pickup. Now, if you recall, when you look back, 72 was the last year of a body style that probably started in 68, I think. So 68 through 72... And it might have been 67 when that body style. Yeah, I believe it was 67. 1967 through 72, the truck looked basically the same. There was no extended cab or, crew cab. There was a crew cab, but it was just for commercial use. The average consumer would never consider something like that. But you had long beds and short beds. But in 1973, Chevrolet really broke the mold with what is referred to now as the square body. Now, if you are a Chevrolet person, then you, or a GMC person for that matter, you know what I mean when I say square body truck, because it was very squarish. The truck was a radical departure from the design of the previous model year, and they sold really well. The truck came in, they were called the CK trucks. The C stood for two-wheel drive, and the K stood for four-wheel drive. So you had a C10, which was a half ton, a C20, which is three-quarter, and a C30, and also in the K. So that told you what it was. So it made it kind of simple for people to understand. But they changed the first time also that you could get a really big block V8 engine in a regular half-ton pickup truck. They made the 454 cubic inch V8 available. The reason I'm talking about this is, two reasons. One, these trucks would rust like within a year, they would start rusting. They talked about all of the zinc-coated primer that they would dip these bodies in, and they still rusted. And it wasn't until the last 15, 20 years or so they started using galvanized metal, which made a big difference. And then they zinc coated it, and then they did all this other stuff, this dip Elpo primer, I think is what they called them, that they would dip them in. And it really made a difference as far as rust prevention. Chevrolet stuck with the square body truck for a really long time. That truck was in its basic configuration from 1973 all the way up to 1987. There's no way you could get by with that today. As fickle as buyers are, and the fact that they want something that's always fresh and new. But the 73 through 87 trucks are really getting a lot of attention right now. Young people that are collecting cars love the square bodies. And they're cheap. They're out there because General Motors built so many of them. Some of these names will be familiar to you. The Cheyenne. Remember that name? I don't know why Chevrolet has not resurrected that name. I always thought that was a good name. They probably will. Everybody else is resurrecting old names like Bronco, like Maverick. So anyway, the Cheyenne was a trim level for that truck. They had one that was really interesting. It was called Custom Deluxe. That's like a committee saying, okay, we can't think of anything else, so let's just put some names in a hat and draw them out. Okay, first name, Custom. Okay, second name, Deluxe. Oh, well, I guess we'll call it the Custom Deluxe. Then they also had the Custom, just a regular Custom. And then they had the Scottsdale. You remember that? The Scottsdale was a trim package that was just above the Cheyenne, which was just above the Custom Deluxe. And then in 1982, they came out with the Silverado. Now, the Silverado was basically just a trim package with Chevrolet. So when I say trim package, I mean like the seat fabric, the door panels, the exterior moldings, the mirrors, the wheels, that kind of stuff. That's what makes something a trim package. And so the Silverado became the top of the line. And then it wasn't until, I think, 1988 when the newer body style came out, which was much more modern and long overdue for Chevrolet, is where they actually changed the name of their truck to Silverado. And that's the rest of the story. But these things are becoming popular, and you'll see they're going to be more and more collectible. They look good fixed up to a lot of people. To me, I just got so tired of that body style as a Chevrolet dealer. I am just not enthusiastic about that at all. I like the 72 and older. And, of course, the 65 was one of my favorite body styles. And you know, I'm doing this this car hauler project. It's a 49 body. It's an F4, which is a heavy duty. You know, you hear the F1, and then it became the F100, and then it became the F150. But they had their trucks, Ford, and is what I'm talking about, had their trucks called the F1, which was a half-ton truck, light-duty truck, then a F2, F3, F4, F5, and so forth. And so I'm using that body. And, you know, and they're known by their really small grills, big, bulging hood, rounded hood that goes into fenders that are flat, kind of like a modern or an old version of the modern Dodge Ram truck. You know, they have those fenders that kind of stick out on the sides and are lower than the level of the hood. But, you know, that body style is just so radically different than what they have now. One of the things about this 49 truck project that I'm doing, this car hauler, is I'm a little bit... It's definitely going to be a two-person vehicle. It won't be something that multiple people can ride in. I could have paid a whole lot of extra money and built a crew cab out of that. And it's just what these guys can do with metal is just amazing. But I just decided, nah, let's not do that. Let's just go ahead and go with what it was and put it on a modern chassis and be able to use it as a towing vehicle now, or a hauling vehicle. The only problem with this whole theory of mine is the fact that I have taken this truck to such a high level that I'm going to be afraid to let anybody else drive it. And that is exactly what happens. you have a plan. You are working with a builder or a body shop, or it could be somebody that does everything. I mean, they could do help you find the car, they restore the car, they do all the mechanicals, and they deliver you a car. And it's just like when you build a house. I mean, you end up going over budget because you keep making changes, and it's really kind of hard to halfway do something. Somebody says, well, do you want to spend $5,000 to do a paint job, or do you want a really good paint job and spend $10,000? And so the difference can mean way more than that in terms of resale value and so forth. I've got a good friend who's doing a complete restoration on a Porsche. It's a mid-70s Porsche 911. And it's started off, he was going to just make it, he was going to paint it, and he's going to do a nice driver. He was going to rebuild the existing engine and so forth. It has turned into something that he will spend in excess of $100,000 restoring this car now. Before, it was going to be about a $25,000 to $30,000 project. Now, he's got the money to do that, and most people would not. That would be a big problem. But he has, his vision has changed, and he has the money to back that up. So what happens so often to these projects is, sometimes they happen with our homes. Like we're building a deck and we get part of the way done and we just don't finish, or we're doing something with we acquire an older car from a relative or something that needs some work, and our intentions are that we're going to make it drivable and do a bunch of stuff, and we start doing it, and then life gets in the way, and it ends up becoming either yard art or a garage storage unit. We start stacking stuff on top of it. I've helped people get cars out of garages that were initially a project that they were going to do. And it just became something that wasn't important. And so I've got some folks right now have a Volvo P1800S, one of my favorite body styles for a car. This is the coupe version. I've already restored one of those and just think it's one of the most beautiful bodies on a car that's ever been made. Volvo P1800S. Not the wagon version, but the coupe version. Just look at that car. Look it up online. You'll see what I'm talking about. You may disagree, but I'd love a sports car with tail fins on it. It's just really cool. But anyway, I found it. It found me. I talked about it, I think, maybe yesterday, but they're trying to make a decision of what to do with the car. And the car, another couple of years, and it's unrestorable. Now's the time to act and do something with that car, but the one of the family members is hesitant to do anything with it, just out of feelings of nostalgia. So nostalgia can cost you some money if you're not careful. Well, let's take our final break, and we'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, we're back, and if you're in the market right now for tires, a couple recommendations. Number one, don't change sizes on your car. Unless you're a younger person wanting to do maybe a four-wheel drive vehicle and you want to lift it and do all kinds of adjustments to the suspension, then that's a totally different story. I'm talking about if you're driving a Honda Accord, or if you're driving a Camry, or you're driving an F-150 truck for that matter, and you need to stick with the same size tire that the tire manufacturer recommended. If you don't, several different things could happen. You could affect the handling on the car. Definitely road noise and stuff like that issues. If you go to a more aggressive tread, you need to think about that. Check out the ratings on some of these also, because the tires can differ greatly as far as how long that they will last. But also, if you increase the size of your tires, the diameter and the circumference of the tire goes up, then you're going to affect your speedometer. And some vehicles, like I know F-150s, if you put bigger tires on them, from 2015 on back, you could actually go in and reprogram the computer, which would reprogram the speed, and you could just put in the tire size that you put on the vehicle, and it would automatically adjust the speedometer and the odometer. But if you don't, if you put bigger tires on it, you're not going to be putting as many miles on the vehicle as you're really driving. Think about that. work out the math, but it's true. And the different tire dealers and different manufacturers have charts that will tell you exactly what kind of impact it will have on your speedometer and odometer. I mean, you could drive a car for 20,000 miles, and after you put bigger tires on it, and really the car has 24,000 miles on it, but you're only showing 20. And that would be deceptive. And you don't want to do that if you're selling a car to somebody. So, you know, as far as brand is concerned, I don't have a lot of recommendations. I mean, I have been very lucky with Michelin tires. They do well, and they have all different types of tread patterns for all different applications. I just put a new set of Michelins on that 76 Buick that I bought. I had a choice of several different brands, and I just said, let's put some Michelins on it. Are you sure? They're expensive. I said, I don't care. This car deserves Michelins. So, but there's plenty of good. Pirellis are a good brand. Goodyear, of course. BF Goodrich are good tires. There's a lot of good different brands out there. Just check the ratings. Understand that sometimes the tires that are sold at places like Walmart and stuff aren't as, they may be the same brand, but they're not the same quality as some of the tires that you will find at tire dealers and tire stores and online, and even at new car dealerships. We sell only the best brands and the top-rated tires within those brands, so it's something to think about. Well, thanks a lot, and I guess I will be talking to you tomorrow.